Good morning, Chair Postman, members Garrett Vollendross, staff, and guests. The lobbies are open and the recording has begun.
Thanks, Dustin. We'll convene the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board meeting for September 27th, 2023. Good morning, everybody. As Dustin mentioned, the meeting's being recorded. It'll be available online as fast as later today. First item up is an update on our social equity program. And I saw Nicola Reed. And I will turn it over to you. Nicola, are you able to?
Yes, I apologize. I'm now going to share my screen.
No problem. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. So good morning, Chair Postmember, or Postman, Board Member Garrett and Vollendroff. My name is Nicola Reed, and I am the Compliance and Adjudications Manager in the Licensing Division at the Liquor and Cannabis Board. I will be giving this social equity program update today on behalf of Aaron Washington, who unfortunately is speaking out of prior engagement. Since the LCB has received the applications, some work has been completed. We received the application scores and supporting documents back from Ponder Diversity Group. The double-blind lottery has occurred, and the sealed results were delivered to the agency. All applicants have been notified via letter on their application status per Ponder Diversity Group's review. We wanted to give you an overview of how many applications came in per jurisdiction and what the highest scoring applicant was within that jurisdiction and what the lowest scoring applicant was. I can read these through. I'll focus on some of the bigger ones. So for King County, there was 125 applications for 8 allotments. The highest score was 310. With the lowest score being 55. Please note that the lowest score isn't the lowest score who got through, but just out of the 125 applicants that did apply. In Snohomish County, there was 42 applications, and that was for 7 locations, with the highest score being 305, and the lowest score being 50. And so I don't want to take everyone's time going through each jurisdiction, but I figure I could pause here for a moment while people take a look. And of course, this information can be made available after the meeting as well.
Can I ask you a question while we're pausing? You were just saying, like, in King County, the top score was 310, and then the low score that you mentioned was of all applicants. Do we know offhand what the low score of qualifying candidates was?
We do have that information. So I don't have it here with the presentation today, but we do have, there was not a lottery needed in King County. And so the scores were all pretty close to the highest score.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, just sort of how compact those winning scores were, qualifying scores were. Thank you.
Right. No problem. And you will see here, there were 3 counties that are not listed that they did not have any applications. And that was Skamania, San Juan, and Garfield. And then there was another county that had less applications than allotments, and that was Clickitat County. There was 2 applications with 4 allotments available.
I have a question. So does that mean that there's still some open allotments from the 43?
Yes. So there is, I believe, 6 open allotments that we will now be able to use towards the next application window.
Okay.
And in that case, in the next application window, those, would there be portability then? Because under our new coming social equity program, that's more flexible?
I would need to check with the AGs on that, but it's definitely a question we could ask.
All Okay. Yeah. One other question on this. You mentioned the double blind lottery, which we've talked about a lot, but could you just tell people what are the mechanics of that? How did that work?
So each applicant was assigned a random identifying number by Ponder Diversity Group. That random identifying number was then sent to who we contracted to do the double blind lottery with. They go through a process of basically, the way I think of it, it's like spinning the numbers. So randomizing the numbers the first time. Well, first they assign, okay, so the identifying numbers go to the lottery. They then assign another identifying number to each identifying number. Then those numbers are randomized. And then the lottery will take fake numbers, none that went through, and make sure that they're continuing to get, you know, random scores when they do the lottery process. Right. And so they go through a two-step verification with that. They then have the second set of random scores that are drawn, and they put them in order of how they were drawn.
Right. Okay. Yeah. The point of this, obviously, is that the people who are doing that work have no idea of the individuals who are behind those applications. It's just numbers they're seeing, not a name.
They're not seeing a name. They're just seeing a number and then a second randomized number. Right. And then all of the work is done with someone else who works there watching over the individual. And then the results were brought to us in a sealed envelope that had to be cut open. And the person who did the lottery had to witness us open the envelope and then also notify the drawn applicants that they were drawn.
Right. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Move on here. So this is just an application overview of some of the different statuses that occurred. So many applications were withdrawn. There was 161 due to the applicant not meeting minimum social equity qualifications. And so if you'll recall that for an application to be scored, the applicant had to meet two of the three initial requirements. So this number reflects the applications that did not meet the minimum social equity requirements. There was 254 withdrawn due to their rubric score not being high enough to proceed within the county that they had applied for. 30 due to the applicant not starting the application process. They were sent an email many times, but they were also called every Friday by Ponder Diversity Group to try connect and assist with them starting the process. And two were withdrawn recently due to not being the successful applicant in the double blind lottery. So for title certificate letters, 10 title certificate holders qualified to move within their county. One of these qualifiers did hold two title certificates, and so that's why there is 11 of them. And
I'm sorry, Nicola, did you say one held two titles?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And so the title certificate counties, there was two in Benton County, one in Clark County, one in Lewis County, one in Pierce County, or two in Pierce County, I'm sorry, and four in Snohomish County. Okay, so the double blind lottery letters, two counties had a double blind lottery, and that was Clark County and Snohomish, and this was for three available licenses. So six people went through to the lottery, and that was for one location in Snohomish County and two locations in Clark County. That lottery has occurred with the results delivered, and so the applicants that were drawn were notified via letter, as were the applicants who were not selected in the lottery. So we now have the preliminary letters of approval that we have sent out. 37 letters were sent to the highest scoring applicants. A total of 40 letters, though, including the lottery winners. So at this point, all applicants have been notified of their application status per Ponder Diversity Group's review.
And so we have 40, you've heard that it's eligible now applicants or because they're not license holders yet, right?
Right. Okay. So we have 40 applicants that are now approved to go through the application process and meet the other requirements to hold a license. Correct. There is no timeline on finding a location, financing, or things of that nature. But of course, due to availability within counties, you know, the quicker you are able to secure a location or financing, you know, could be a better approach if you're able to.
Right. Okay.
So on the letter that everyone has received regarding their application status, they were given an initial appeal process, which includes the email address and how to appeal. This is the first part of the appeal process. We will then draft an official statement of intent to withdraw that will be emailed to the applicant, and it will include all the information found during Ponder Diversity Group's application review, supporting documents, all of that. If an applicant would still like to proceed with their appeal after reading the pertaining information, they can just respond to the email and let the adjudications coordinator know that they would like to proceed. That would then initiate the official appeal process. The application and all supporting documents will be sent to the Office of Administrative Hearings and then assigned to an Assistant Attorney General. Any applicant, of course, does have the right to hire counsel, but it is definitely not a requirement to appeal a decision. Applicants will receive a pre-scheduling order with scheduled dates from the Office of Administrative Hearings and will be notified by the AGs, served with information anytime a document or something is filed. So we know that many applicants are interested in obtaining their application file. We would be happy to get those out. The requests do need to go through public records, and they can be emailed at publicrecords@lcb.wa.gov. We also know that a lot of applicants are really curious to know their score. And now that all applicants have been notified of their application status, we are looking at ways to make the scores more readily available so that you're not having to do a public records request. And we'll be discussing this further today.
That's great.
Chair Postman, Board Member Garrett Ballendroff, may I answer any questions for you?
I'm good at this point. No, thank you, Mr. Reed, appreciate that. I'll just add at this point, and we'll remind folks again, when you go on that slide about the appeal process, the board, the three board members sit as the adjudication panel for anything that is appealed from the Office of Administrative Hearings. We operate in a quasi-judicial manner in that case. So we are prohibited from talking about or to or learning anything about those appeals. It'll be kept from us by staff and the AAGs. And when we act on it, we can only act on what's in the record. So if anybody is appealing, they really should not speak to a board member about it, because that board member then likely will have to recuse themselves from acting on it. And with only three board members, we really need to hold all of us for that important job. So I just, as a reminder, that we've always already gotten from council, of course, but the three of us and the public and to our own staff, the board just needs to be walled off from the appeal process. There will be other people in the agency on the staff side, including the director, the licensing director, who are not operating in a quasi-judicial manner. So that's a different question. But for members Garrett Vollendroff and myself, we really have to wall that off for the good of the process. So just as a reminder. Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for all the work on this. And I know there's a lot more work to be done still, but appreciate that update. This is it's a big milestone, and appreciate you and your team's work on it.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we will move to our next item, which is alcohol-related rulemaking. We have an action item before us today, and I will turn it over to Daniel Jacobs, our policy and rules coordinator. Good morning, Mr. Jacobs.
Good morning, Chair Postman, members Garrett and Vollendroff, LCB staff, and members of the public. I'm here this morning to request approval of the rulemaking order, or CR-103, regarding implementation of 2023 liquor legislation. If approved today, these rule changes will go into effect on October 28th. This project was initiated with the filing of CR-101 on May 24th, addressing three bills. The first bill expanded the type of work that minors can perform on liquor-licensed premises. The second bill banned the sale and manufacture distribution of products that combine alcohol and cannabis. And the third bill created a special permit for owners and operators of short-term rental units. Most folks will know Airbnb or Vrbo, and allows the owners, operators of those units to provide a complimentary bottle of wine to renters over 21 after verifying ID and complying with some other requirements like advising about laws against public consumption, et cetera. This law also allows these permit holders to obtain wine directly from wine distributors. And this last bill is the only one of the three that that the rules team ended up doing rulemaking on. And it's the only bill that's that requires rulemaking on this. The only changes that we're proposing are to change the two regulations that we have on the books on wine distributors. These two regulations talk about what wine distributors can and cannot do, and we need to change these regulations in order to add that wine distributors now can sell directly to these special permit holders. For anyone interested, these rules are Washington Administrative Code 314-24-180 and 314-24-190. Draft rules were circulated in early July, and the public was given 2 weeks to comment on them. We received one written comment, and when the CR-102 was filed, we only received one written comment between the time that the draft rules were released and when the CR-102 was filed on August 2nd. And that comment was asking for more detailed record keeping. Specifically, they'd suggested that perhaps the permit holders would be required to have a name and signature log for renters who are going to be accepting these complimentary bottles of wine. The other suggestion was that perhaps the permit holders should be required to keep a log of how many bottles of wine they buy and turn these logs over to the LCB on an annual basis. Neither of these suggestions have been adopted into rule, and I'll just briefly explain why. The name and signature log, that one wasn't adopted because such a log, if turned over to the LCB, would be a public record and potentially subject to unredacted public disclosure. As you know, we're only allowed to redact things from public disclosure when a law tells us we can redact it. And there wouldn't be anything that would allow us to redact any information from it. Secondly, the bottle tracking suggestion wasn't incorporated because on the wine distributor's end, they already have to track this. Wine distributors already have to keep track of who they're distributing bottles to. So when the permit holders acquire wine from wine distributors, there's already going to be a record of that on the wine distributor end, and wine distributors are already turning those records over to the LCB. And so because of that, we already are going to have that data. Additionally, I had a robust discussion with a stakeholder focused mainly on prevention and public health about how the ID check would work and why the Liquor Cannabis Board didn't think it was necessary to add to the already detailed statutory language. The person was asking why we didn't put it in rule. We had an extended email back and forth conversation, and I've actually included the entire conversation in the concise explanatory statement that'll be, assuming that this gets approved today, the concise explanatory statement is going to go on our website. And for folks who want to look at it, they'll be able to read our entire email conversation. Additionally, I asked if they wanted our email conversation included as a public comment, and they said yes. So I just wanted to be transparent about it. The public hearing was held September 13th, and there's no testimony provided, no written comments submitted, either before or after. If approved today, like I mentioned, the rules will become effective on October 28th. Some previous paperwork had said that they'd be effective October 27th, but because the rules become effective 31 days after, and some months have one more day than other, I just miscounted. So if approved, the rules will be effective October 28th, not the 27th. I'm happy to answer any questions, but based on this, I'm requesting approval for filing the CR-103.
Great. Any questions from the board? No, not from either. So with that, I'll look for a motion to adopt the CR-103 for 2023 liquor legislation implementation.
This is Ali. I move adoption of the CR-103 for 2023 liquor legislation implementation.
Great. And a second?
This is Jim. I second that motion.
Great. So that is approved. Thanks, Mr. Jacobs. Appreciate the work that you put into this one. It was not one of our more controversial ones, but I have appreciated how you've handled the kind of big bulk of legislation that we got and figured out what we really needed to act on and narrowing down on that. And then the transparency and the stakeholder input, too, I think is to be applauded. So thanks for all of that.
Of course. I'll just say that I got good training on stakeholder transparency from Dr. Hoffman, who taught me how to do the rulemaking. So I'll just give a brief shout out to her. Then the last thing is, I did just want to clarify, this rule set is not about 5448. That's a separate rules project. I'd gotten a few folks asking questions. That's a separate rules project.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Thank you so much.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. We are to the part of the meeting where we have general public comment. Everyone will have up to 4 minutes to speak. I'm going to ask people to limit comments to LCB business as much as possible, refrain from personal attacks or going off topic. If people wander too far, I'll give you a gentle reminder to get back to the point. Let's be respectful to all the speakers and for the speakers to be respectful to everybody else who's here. Remember, everything's recorded. It'll be available online later. If you're in the room with us today, just a quick reminder how sensitive the microphones in the ceiling here are. They pick up paper rust, side conversations, phones beeping and buzzing. If you're joining us online and we have seven, just give us a second to connect you and we'll do so. Dustin, in each case, will remind you when you have 30 seconds left. He'll just jump in and then we're going to ask you to finish right at 4 minutes. I think that's all our direction we need. So I will say one more time, though, there may be also people here who have appealed or may appeal their decision regarding the social equity application. As I said earlier, the LCB board members constitute a quasi-judicial body and will be the final decision makers in any administrative appeals. Therefore, they cannot participate in these particular conversations until the end of the appeal process. While we welcome comments of a general nature, please do not discuss the particulars of your application or appeal. If you begin to discuss specific facts or applications, I'll ask you to stop so that we can preserve the appeal process and that the board members can preserve their ability to participate in that. If you don't stop, we'll have to end the public comment, your public comment at that point. We're going to start as we normally do with those who've signed up virtually. And the first person up is Sammy Sott.
Chair, this is Dustin. Sammy Sott registered to speak, but I do not see him online today.
Okay, we'll check back with him as we move down the list. If you see him pop up, let me know. If not, we'll just check back later. Next person I've signed up is William D.
Good morning, Chair. William D. did register to speak, indicated earlier this morning by phone that he may have some technical difficulties. I do not see him online.
Okay. And if anybody's listening, you know, you can always submit written comments, and the board members will see that. Next person signed up is Kevin Shelton.
Chair, Kevin Shelton registered to speak, but is not online with us today.
Okay. How about Luke Carlin? I think Luke is there, and we will find you in one second.
Hey, are we okay, you here?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. Good morning.
Awesome. You guys see me? Good morning.
How you guys doing? So I'm just observing from the outside. I'm doing like a documentary series on this overall process, this 10-year process. I grew up in Seattle, went to Garfield High School. So I kind of, you know, weirdly enough, saw the very beginning of this whole process and, you know, happened to go into cannabis reporting and then just ended up here. Now, I just kind of want to talk about like, I'm not trying to get too general, too broad. I want to talk about this LCB specifically, but like just conflict of interest, right? Like, I'm curious, like, what do you guys think, like, for someone, so for someone like Ollie Garrett, right? She owns a company called PMT Solutions that collects debt, right? Collects debt specifically from cannabis companies. Or is that true? I want to confirm that. But like, what do you guys think about that in terms of, is that really a good look? Like, it seems like a pretty big conflict of interest, right? No response?
Well, Mr. I'll just, since you haven't participated with us before, I'll let you know it's not a Q&A session with the board. And then I would also ask you if you have things, as you just said, you don't know that they're true. I'd rather you didn't share them until you could figure that out. So, but you can go ahead with your comments, but it's not a Q&A session.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess just to kind of like, you know, kind of go into conflict of interest and just, you know, and I'm not trying to throw any shots to you, Ollie, at all. I'm just, it just seems like the system here is a little bit, if you start to look under the surface, is a little bit, there's conflict of interest all across the board. You know, I understand this is a tough process. This is super hard. It's a new industry. But, you know, I think, and it's, I'm really glad to genuinely see you guys roll out this social equity program, and I hope it does well. I genuinely hope it succeeds. Most haven't, right? But you guys do have a chance to, you know, actually, you know, potentially make this a shiny example of what social equity could be, which I hope to see. But, I'll just conclude that. I just want us to all think about, like, you know, conflict of interest and really, is this really, are we doing this for the social equity applicants, or are we doing this to, like, virtue signal and to show the rest of the country that we're not the only state that hasn't done social equity. But anyways, I really appreciate you guys. We'll probably be talking here more soon. Thank you.
Okay, the next person signed up is Christopher King. Mr. King.
Chair Christopher King registered to speak, was online earlier, but is not online anymore this morning.
Okay, we will go back and check for him and other online participants. The next person signed up remotely is Sakai Perkins. And you should be able to go ahead, Mr. Perkins.
Hello, can everybody hear me?
You bet. Good morning.
Good morning. Greetings, everybody. My name is Sakai Perkins. I'm a former owner of the Green Thumb Collective, current owner of the Green Wall Street. Today marks a milestone for the people of our great state of Washington and our beloved cities and counties across the region. I'm here to announce that the WSLSLB, I'm sorry, the Washington State Liquor and Control Board, FMSGS Global Strategies, Plunder Diversity Group, Washington Build Black Alliances, also including the Honorable David Postman, Her Excellency Ollie Garrett, my mentor Paula Sardinas, should all be commended for their expertly magnanimous duty in which was accomplished under dire state of affairs. Congratulations to you all, and thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Perkins. And next is Sakani Perkins. Thank you. And Mr. Perkins, you should be able to go ahead now.
Can you all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. I just want to read off something. Foremost, I have to.
We're having a little bit of a hard time hearing you right now, Mr. Perkins.
Can you hear me better?
A little bit.
Let's see if I can get the mic closer. First and foremost, I have to thank all respected parties involved, for it was a long, tedious process that created an atmosphere of anxiety on both ends. I want to commend the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board for exercising integrity, patience, transparency, and social responsibility throughout the duration of the session. The ultimate success of any program is dependent upon the foundation and structure. I can honestly state that the groundwork laid for the Social Equity and Cannabis Program in Washington State was thoroughly developed with the conscientious effort of providing justice for the BIPOC community, as well as the countless casualties that have been impacted by the war on drugs. I believe the program is a step toward balancing out some of the inequalities caused by a caste system designed to hinder the BIPOC communities while simultaneously allowing predominantly white communities to prevail. The individuals who were fortunate enough to get approved for their licenses reflect the liberal, progressive, and diverse society we have in the state of Washington. I applaud the third-party contractor for the program, the Ponder Diversity Group.
The manner in which the system was established is an indication of the level of quality put forth for the program. Additionally, I want to give praise to Paulus Ardenas and Brian Gilchrist at FMS Global Strategies, the quality mentorship, customer service, and care provided at FMSG Global is by far second to none. I highly suggest to those who are interested in getting involved within the industry to engage with mentors such as FMSG Global. In conclusion, I feel the program in its entirety is an overall success. I must say I was reluctant to believe in the process, given the sensitive history behind social equity. However, I was compelled to allow justice to prevail naturally. So, thank you all. Congratulations to all the winners. I know some of us that may have not made it, which includes me. But my message is for everybody to have patience and bear with the Liquor Control Board. Everything's a process, and that's basically it in a nutshell. I don't want to take up too much time. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Appreciate your comments. Let's check online here for a second, see if any of our folks have joined. Dustin, Mr. Saad, Mr. Shelton, Mr. King?
Checking now.
Oh, there we go. I see Mr. King raising his hand. Okay, Mr. King, you should be able to go ahead.
Terrific. I am here. Great morning, everybody. I come in the spirit of unity and education and open government, as always. The first thing I want to say is congratulations to the people who prevailed thus far in, and that's a wonderful thing. I'm happy for them. And I want to also give some congratulations to a rather forceful presentation by my adversary, Mike Asai, in front of Seattle City Council. We're going to come back to that one in a minute, but that was fantastic. I mean, the way he went after Shama Sawant, I think, was appropriate. And I'm going to share something with you. The fact that I mentioned in an email, I was Shama's first videographer. That's a fact. So this picture was taken. I'm standing right next to Shama the day she won. There you go. Been around the block with her. But we're going to come back to that in a minute. I want to talk about this issue here, though, first with Bill Lucchella. What I want to find out, because I don't want to jump the gun on anything, and maybe there's some law that you guys know about that I don't know about, because I've been litigating these issues for years, and I've almost never lost a case dealing with public records. But I'm just trying to figure out, and as I stand with you in solidarity, there was a cover letter, there was a resume, there was candidate snapshots, there was a file called William Redacted, there was LCB director interview notes redacted, a thing called WL notes, I'm not sure what that is, and then there's something else, Lucchella 51123 redacted. But basically, like I say, though, the whole laundry list, I got nothing. Yeah. And so I asked you this morning for a public information request. Pepper! See, Pepper's not happy about it either. I asked you this morning for a public information request because I want to figure out, hey, why didn't I get these materials? So anyway, that's that piece. But now going back now to the thing with Shama, new mailman. She knows. She knows that's a different mailman. It's unbelievable. So the next thing you know, Pepper! So the next thing you know, what you have is with Shama, I worked, like I say, I was her videographer, you know, and back when she won, these are all my videos with Shama, like 10 or 12 of them, you know, like back at Bill's Bar, the night she won and all that. And one of them is really keen. It's the Shama Sawant in solidarity to Sue MERS to help fight homelessness at People's Assembly. That was tongue in cheek. After all of us got tired of her, she used to march and rally with us and fight the banks off foreclosure. I was busy keeping people in their houses, working in the foreclosure fairness program and doing all that stuff with, you know, the licensed local council. And then she just bailed on us, you know. And back then she was standing strong against people like Steve Hobbs, which I find hilarious now because all the civil rights activists are all busy giving money to Steve Hobbs. And so I think his complaint is well lodged, but his complaint might be too narrow. I think it's everybody. It's the whole system. You know, and even now, as you guys are working to try to correct some of this, I mean, let's get down to brass tacks. It's going to be, you know, 12 years will have gone by from the time that I inappropriately voted for 502, you know. And in that time, back, I think my first Shama video was 2013. You know, that's so time has taken on. And so even now, these black pioneers like Kevin Shelton didn't get it yet. Libby, the craziest thing about Libby, Kevin and Ben Shelton didn't get it. But Libby, as we know, she's the one who actually.
Chris, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you. She's the only black person that I know of, that we know of, who actually passed the lottery that Daryl Powell called a fraud. He's now like NAACP president. But anyway. She's the only one who passed and then got it taken away. And then the law that got it taken away was the policy was changed, and then she still didn't get a license. And so, of course, she's frustrated. I'm her friend. I'm frustrated for her. So I'm going to sit back and watch, and I hope that we can get some answers here and keep on moving. I got to get back to work. Y'all have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Comments? Yep. Last call for Sammy Saad. Not online. Okay. We'll move to the people in the room. First up is Mike Sy.
Good morning, Chair Postman, Board Members Garrett, and Board Member Ballendroff, and for those who are here present. My name is Mike Sy with the Emerald City Collective, first downtown Seattle dispensary. 2010, second black owned in Washington State. It's been a long journey, and I'm also the vice president of Black Access to Cannabis. Let me just say this, you know, the attacks that have been on Ollie are just disrespectful, unnecessary, and it needs to stop. And I'm not attacking the gentleman who spoke this morning, but what I am gonna say is, let's get the facts straight. Governor Inslee appointed Ollie in 2016. If there was any conflict of interest, that would have been dealt with in 2016. So let me just make that clear. Governor Inslee is a smart man. He knows what he's doing. He appointed Ollie to make that started the change here at LCB. So let me say that. I'm here and I've been here because of Peter Manning, who started this fight in 2015. A lone soldier. Peter's my family. When we had to, was unjustly shut down in 2016 because of Senate Bill 5052, you know, I gave up. My son had gotten in trouble. We were forced closed by the city of Seattle via the state. I didn't believe in politicians. I didn't believe in the system. I had no hope. Peter kept going. And that's because he has a fight in him that he'll never stop. And because of that fight, he got connected with a very well-known lobbyist in Paulo Sardinas, which in essence got the agency to do an agency-led bill of 2870. And I have to say this, you know, there's still a lot of scraps. How can I say it? I'm here with a heavy heart. You know, Rick Garza was a bad stain on this agency. He did a lot of corruption. He did a lot of bad. He didn't care about the community whatsoever. There's hiccups that's been going on because of Rick Garza's lack of leadership, lack of caring. I'm glad he's gone. There needed to be a change here. I commend you, Chair Postman. I commend you, Ollie. I commend you, Board Member Ballendraw. You guys are part of that change that we need, but we still need some changes still to keep continuing. I know everyone's done a great job here with the social equity program. We still have more to go. But you know, the facts are the DIA map got leaked out to the community under Rick Garza's leadership. It didn't get leaked out to the Black community. It got leaked out to the white community. The March 1st date was leaked out to the white community. And these are facts, okay? And so, you know, we're at a point where, yes, the program has come to finally license being issued. But, you know, there's an issue there with, you know, the rubric scores not being provided to applicants. And I think the agency understands that. I think they know that.
Mike,
and
I
think you guys probably didn't really fully know that. And it's unfortunately because it's like you guys are kind of at the scapegoats at times, and that's unfortunate. But, you know, this program beginning under Rick Garza, and I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad there's new blood here and changes happening, but we still need to continue to do better for the Black and Brown community and reach out and just do better. Thank you.
And Peter Manning is the last person we have signed up. Mr. Manning.
Good morning, Chair Postman, Ballendroff, and Mrs. Garrett. My name is Peter Manning. I'm with Black Excellence Cannabis. I just want to tell everybody there's a rumor floating that I am somewhat trying to shut the program down. No, I merely ask that we take our time in considering how we look at the rubric points because there were some discrepancies in the point system, and I believe there was corruption in data. I am pleased to say that I know of several individuals that obtained a license or application to proceed to get a license. I am happy with that. I'm overly thrilled. I have been fighting this fight for 9 years. When I first came to this boardroom, not this particular boardroom, in the older building, it was hundreds and hundreds of white folks that were talking about how great the industry was. And I was the only Black person telling me I was overlooked for whatever reason. But I fought for 9 years to get us to this point, period. And that's a fact. I do have a problem with information that I discovered a couple weeks ago or about a month ago that a representative from Ponder Diversity Group was supposed to speak at an event. Had that happened, the program would have been scrapped. I also understand at the same breath that same person had, was a representative of the Ponder Diversity Group, was also scheduled for a job interview here within that same week, here at the agency, at the LCB, which I thought was a direct conflict with Ponder. All I'm saying is, Black Excellence Cannabis is a watchdog for the Black and Brown community. We have been that way, nothing has changed. We will never change, and we will continue to fight the fight. For anyone to say that Black Excellence Cannabis is trying to stop a program that's going to benefit the communities of color, and I mean Native American, I mean Latino, and descendants of slaves, there's something wrong with their mentality. We are moving forward to make this more inclusive of those people I just spoke of in this industry because we were affected by the war on drugs. We were given years in prison for less than an eighth of weed, while our white counterparts were growing warehouses full of weed, getting no scrutiny from anyone. And we all know that. So moving past that, our communities need to get rid of the gatekeepers, those black and brown people that have been in positions of power to speak out and say something, and black and brown people haven't gotten nowhere. Those are the gatekeepers. We need not look far. Look at the same ones that you haven't gotten anywhere with. Those are the gatekeepers. Look at the ones that are making progress. Those aren't gatekeepers because they're not scared to confront. Those are activists. We need to get the blinders off our communities, black and brown people, I'm speaking. Disregard what the gatekeeper tells you. He works for the interests of the white oligarchs or the white liberals or whoever you want to call it, the people in power. Just a month ago, white retailers had a meeting in the Central District, predominantly black area, to figure out a way to neutralize black excellence in cannabis. They spoke on this for 45 minutes, and all we speak of, we're not talking about harming people.
Peter,
we're not
talking
about robbing people. We're talking about inclusion in the $100 billion industry in the state of Washington, and they don't want us to get a part of that. Come together, black and brown community. Get rid of your gatekeepers and join a movement that will move. Not necessarily black excellence in cannabis. Join a movement that's moving for our people in the right direction of economic wealth. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. That's the last person we have signed up. I just want to say real briefly, we give broad leeway for people to speak during these 4 minutes. Some think too broadly, but that's been the practice we have and will continue to do so. But I got to say, those that come and call themselves journalists and then throw things that they say in the same sentence are unsubstantiated, prove that they're not journalists. And I really wish people could refrain from those sorts of attacks. And I got to say, I feel the same about things that were said about Rick here today. There is no substantive evidence, proof, investigation, or anything else that would lead anyone to believe that any of those things were true. And I just wish we could work on the future and do this without trying to cast aspersions over and over and over again, which has been a regular part of these conversations now for years. And it's unfortunate. That's not what these meetings are designed for. These meetings and people's ability to speak freely helped us shape this program in the ways that some people today applauded this program. So it's got an important role to play. But people need to be respectful in that. So with that, we're going to adjourn today. We'll be back next Tuesday for a board caucus. We're adjourned.